You're very welcome to the Firm and Fast Golf Podcast. I'm your host, Shane Darby. Today's episode is the second part of our interview with the grandee of Irish golf course architecture, none other than Pat Ruddy, the man responsible for the design of Irish golf courses such as the European Club, Sandy Hills at Rossapenna Golf Resort, the Glasheedy and Pollen courses at Ballyliffin Golf Club, in addition to a plethora of other revisions and new golf courses. Today's installment primarily focuses upon the origin story of the European Club. Over the course of the next 45 minutes or so, we will explore how Pat has found the site at British Bay, why he's designed 20 holes, the utilisation of sleepers and bunker faces of the European Club, how best to play the Index 1 seventh hole, Pat's continuous improvement mantra, and of course, the importance of his greenkeeping team at British Bay. Along the way, Pat shares anecdotes, golfing wisdom, and a few stories to boot from a lifetime in golf. We do hope you enjoy the show. What can you tell me about the extensive search that you undertook that led you to identifying the property that has become the European Club?
You're taking the piss now, I know. You've heard this story, yeah?
No, well, my listeners probably haven't. So it's for the benefit of the listeners.
Well, you see, you're dealing with...
As I said, it's all about you, Pat.
That's right. You're dealing with one of the great brains of the age, you see. Yeah. And I had been two major efforts to build a golf course, both in... Now, a penny dropped me one day. What the hell am I doing inland? As I spent most of my young golf on links at Ross's Point. And this came home to me when I was doing the publishing the yearbook for the Golfing Union of Ireland at that time. And it came the turn of Ballybunion to host the Irish Amateur Championship. And the rule that I had from the union was put on the cover a picture of the clubhouse for that year's championship venue. Now, at that time, Ballybunion had a very modest clubhouse. They built a palace since. There have been two palaces since, but it was modest. So I said to the union, they wouldn't put a person on the cover because there could be jealousy, you see. So I said to the union, do I have your permission to rent a helicopter at my cost, and you had to sweeten it a bit, and go out from Shannon and take a picture of the links with the clubhouse within the links. So that'll do. So I got this helicopter and out we go, and I get a shock because being the brain of Ireland, I had been going to links for years, and I never really noted that there wasn't links everywhere on the coast, because when I get to the coast, I'd be at a links. But up in the helicopter, I could see slab land and cliffs and everything. And then out of the skyline comes this dunes system. And I said, be Jesus, it's not everywhere but how magnificent. So I said, I better rent a helicopter and go survey where is there links land left, because I should be a links man, not wearing Wellingtons going golfing. And I got this helicopter. I could justify the chopper on the basis of self photographs. I did photography with the magazines and that as well. And I liked that.
But dual purpose. Good,
yeah,
thinking.
And I said, got the helicopter and we headed off because I was very, I spent years out at Clontarf and Portmarnock and that. So we started off in that direction and up to Baltray, which is heaven, and Laytown, not bad, even though it's skin me at golf. I couldn't play it. And on we go up and all around the coast, taking note of where there was any sand not used for golf. And all the way around, and after 3 days of flying at some expense, came up past Arklow and got to the European Club just 30 minutes from my home. This is a brilliant move.
You should have turned right and not left.
I went anti-clockwise instead of clockwise. I said, no, that's brainy.
Yeah.
That's brainy. But it did give me the benefit of being able to compare. And of course, the proximity to the airport, proximity to the city. And then everything came together very quickly. because even the European Union got excited and they put in a motorway called European One. It's now the M50, M11. But European One, they did a network of coastal motorways around Europe just at that time to allow movement of goods from one port to the other, and so on, all around. European 2 is over at Belgium. European 3 goes down along France. So we're the only golf course in the world with its own motorway.
And of course, locals and those that have visited your European club will know that there was an extension to the motorway recently.
That's right. And it's a great motorway. It's one of the greatest motorways in golf. When you think about it, sort of, you can go north and all the places you're linked. We were in the world's top 100 in a lot of lists, and you have Portrush, and you have Royal County Down, and you have Portmarnock. In between them, you have Royal Dublin, the Island, Laytown, County Louth, so many. So, and no roundabouts, no lights from us to Newry. It's pretty good. You go around the major city without any stuff.
Wasn't there a new announcement there recently that Neville Hotel are
Yeah, they're going down at Curraghclough, yeah. Down in Wexford, yeah.
Yeah, Curraghclough Beach.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing that.
We're talking, in terms of your helicopter activity, that's the 80s now at this stage, isn't it?
Yes. Early 80s and or late 70s, early 80s, yeah.
Okay. And I believe, sorry, so the site was, well.
Isn't that hard to imagine? That's 44 years ago.
Does it feel that long ago?
I remember in school thinking I'd never see 1960.
Uh-huh.
Never see 1960. And I was going to write an epic, The Life of Christ, when we got to 2000, but okay. No one gave a damn about Christ anymore.
So you'd buy the site or in a couple of different parcels, I believe, and construction commenced in 1988.
Yeah.
You built two additional holes, 20 holes, which at the time I think was probably a bit unusual.
Yeah. It's the reason for that is I love the golf, and I was tempted for a while to do 27 holes, but one or two of the holes would be a little bit crowded. So I said, no, I won't do that. I'll do the best I can in 18, you see.
Yeah.
But there were two sites God-given for par three holes in the dunes. I said, but I can't get them into...
It's 12A and 7A.
Yeah, I can't, after 7 and after 12, I can't get them into a route that'll get me back to the clubhouse twice, 9-hole loops. So I said, okay, what I'll do, I'll do two extra holes, make it 2 10s instead of 2 9s. And they're beautiful par threes. They fulfill the thing of a good golf shot. And a huge brief to the golf designer, to me, is make it a beautiful place where it is well worth spending a few minutes of your life sipping a Coke or something stronger. And don't be worried about the crowd coming up behind. Don't be worried about the crowd holding you up. Just drink it in. The sky and the sea and all the fabric of the earth, and just thank God you're alive. And they do that very well. If you're on an uncrowded day, of which we have many, we have a very small membership by design, so that there's never crowding. I won't say never crowding, but seldom. And just privileged to be able to rest your bones for a while.
I mean, in talking about beautiful vistas, my favourite hole at the European Club is your par 4 7th.
Yeah.
Presents a myriad of challenges, both visual, psychological, and positional, I suppose, is probably the best way of putting it. Reed bed feature on the left-hand side of the fairway, stream and out of bounds on the right. It is one of the best par 4s in the country, meriting its Index 1 status. How, for those that haven't perhaps played the 7th, how would you describe it?
Easy.
once you do what the designer wants you to do.
It's just a straight line of a stream, straight, almost without a wrinkle. Hit it up along the straight line as near as you like, but don't go over the line. And Tommy Armour, I don't know if I find it here in this book quick enough, but he I just looked at it last night, and he came up with a line which is part of mine. Don't be trying shots you don't have.
Yeah.
Don't make shots. Make shots. It's a shot maker's game.
The 7th makes an honest golfer of us all.
So down there, you see, you don't try And people do. A 200-yard carry over water, if your best shot is 199, with golfers are always
doomed
at that.
Failure.
They're always at that.
It'll be grand.
They're always at that. You see, and I say, you see, I used to be in the back seat at school, and then I moved into the second last seat because the back seat was dangerous, because the teacher would come down the class and walk behind the back seat, be looking over your shoulder. But I'd be in the second last seat drawing golf holes at Ross's Point and trying to figure my way around. I had to draw a hole one with the bunkers and the green, and I had to start down on the below the ladies' tee. I couldn't hit it off the ladies' tee onto the fairway. The rough was rough then. The modern man has no idea of what rough is like. Mm. And but I learned how to keep my ball alive and go round a bunker instead of over it. And I've always thought that way. Same thing if I'm, I don't go through too many red lights for that reason either. I think it's wise to stop and wait. But the thing is, I was trying, my big task for a few years was to do 108 in golf, you see. 108. And that's level sixes. And I'd have it figured, if I get a three or a four, I can afford a seven or an eight. And I had all this worked out, the odds. And then I said, I'll try for 100, you see, and that took a while. And then level five's 90. And then can I break 80? And I came stage by stage. And now I've always been a calculator of the odds. And then to be happy with who you are, you see. And most people, you see them coming in and they buy a big, big set of clubs that you want an elephant to carry. And the XYZ latest model, you know. And they never played. Watty Sullivan, I said to him one day, he was writing stories for me. I said, can we write about beginners? And he said, and I egged him on and he did it. He said he wishes they'd take up swimming the way they take up golf. Get red trunks, get up on the high board and dive in at the deep end without having had any lessons. It's really serious stuff, you know. So the thing about it is to plan your way, and so few people do. And Peter Thompson of recent years did an interview with Ivan Morris. I don't know if you know Ivan. And one of the gems he came up with, Peter, he was getting sick and that. And Ivan said, do you play any now? And he said, I do. And I'm getting the same pleasure as I did when I was 12. That's a nice thought.
Yeah.
For an old guy. An old guy to be happy getting young again.
Five times was definitely a man that played within himself.
Yeah.
He had the big shots if he needed them, but obviously he was, I think there's a degree of honesty required in terms of playing good golf.
Can I play this shot? Can I play it? I did a book on John Burke, and he said, you know, one year in the South, he was...
The man that flattened the greens in Lahinch.
Yeah, he was outside the bunker at 18, and the enemy was in the bunker and one down. So John went round the bunker. The man after him said, why did you play a card deal like that? He says, well, I was determined not to be stupid. Chipping it in beside your man wouldn't have done much.
It certainly wouldn't. No. Eh? But yeah, John was John Burke was a legend in his own lifetime in terms of South of Ireland's he won. Did you ever obviously saw him play, did you?
Oh, God, yeah. And a wonderful man. He's very... He'd frighten the hell out of you. See, he'd be there with the Major Beglin, I think was his name, at the first tee. We'd want to play in the South, and they'd be sitting in the car at the first tee and say, hello, how are things in Sligo? And you'd get up and you'd try to not top your drive, you know. But he was a really kind fella. And he wrote some instruction stuff with me. And I found all the, without exception, all the guys who were patient enough to do and skilled enough to play golf decently or decent people, I never met a rat.
Okay. So back to the European for a second. You have 127-yard long green at the par 4, 12th.
Yeah.
Bringing in three putts or four putts into the equation, suspect.
Yeah, well, it's a great three putt. A great three putt on occasion. And that was... it's a little bit of amusement, you know. Once the game is set up properly, and no one is debasing the game, Why not have the occasional different thing and a bit of fun? It creates a lot of fun during the summer, continentals in particular. You hear them roaring and shouting down there. They go up to the back of the green and trying to do the long putt. And I made sure that when we did it, that it's a single green, but it's 10 yards longer than the widest double green at St. Andrews. You have to be tops.
Okay. Yeah. Good work. Good work. The devil's in the detail.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful place. In doing that green, it's raised about 5 or 6 feet off the original level, just for the purpose that when you're walking around on that green, you have the sea in view, as well as the mountains and the sky and all the different dunes. And then that a man of 5 foot 10 or there can also walking around see the sea. It would be a pity to have it hidden from view. It was Darwin wrote about shaving in the hotel at Royal County Down. One of the great pleasures, get up in the morning, have a shave looking out at the mountain and at the bit of the golf course and listening to the sea. And he said at most places, seaside courses change now a bit. You don't see the sea very much. You just hear it outside the dunes. So to look at the goddamn thing.
I found this hard to believe. Your green fee on opening day was £10 or 10 Irish punts at the time.
That's right.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it was
delivered to the Nissan Bluebird.
Yeah, well, it was, we didn't have a clubhouse or anything like that, you see. And I pulled the car in and I said to Bernardine, I'll go down and see will anyone golf. We cut the grass the 2 days before, had it nice as we could. But it was quite rough because it gave us our reputation the early days, perhaps. The days were tough because it was tough because we'd only cut some grass for me. And then at that time, you couldn't get a game. It'd be frosty inland quite often at Christmas. And are wet. And Royal Dublin and Port Marnock would be jammers. So I says, if they're jammers, shall we take a bit of the excess jam if we can get it? So just announced we're opening on Stephen's Day and went down. And there must have been 150 or more cars outside on the road back for a mile, all waiting to come golfing. So we opened the gate and I opened the window. The car started taking £10. And at one stage, an angry female face in the window saying, where's the toilet? And I said, we don't have a toilet. And she said, £10 for golf and no toilet. And I was a smart aleck. I said, it was better than £10 for toilet and no golf. Now, unfortunately for her, we had no trees or bushes at the time. But she worked it out, so I was too busy counting tenners. And then I came home to Bernie and I threw this money on the table and said, where'd you get that? I said, people came golfing and they come again tomorrow. She was delighted. The first return on the place. And it was quite a huge thing. If you have a few years of money going out and out and out and out, it's a wonderful thing to see something coming back in.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you learned a valuable lesson, which you mentioned in the book in terms of it's a tourism grants or some form of capital grant that assisted not only the European clubs gestation, but also further down the line at other clubs that you worked at.
Yeah, and ones I didn't work at. I helped Paddy Giffen get in line for that and one or two more, but that was the most notable one. But you see, the grants were given to places. At the time I was coming along, I was part of a three-ring circus. Because Mount Juliet was getting built with a great fella called Jack Nicklaus, and the K Club has been heard of, had been built by Arnold Palmer. So, and they got grants. You see, Killarney got grants, Ballybunion got grants, because there was a difficulty at the time with Irish golf from a tourism aspect that the clubs didn't want visitors at a weekend. The bloody nuisance. And therefore, Fáilte, Ireland, Port Fáilte couldn't sell a 7-week golfing holiday in Ireland. Couldn't get the few select games.
Okay. So you couldn't play Saturday and Sunday if you were visiting.
Yeah. So they set out to enlarge the stock of attractive places, internationally attractive. And then I kept my head down, just said, no point me saying, look at what I'm doing, because Nicholas and Palmer would outgun me 20 times over each. So I just kept going and going and watching the boys and watching everything. And then it came opening day, you see, and Tim Mahoney down at Mount Juliet asked for £57 green fee. Now, the dearest green fee in Ireland at that time was £30 at Royal County down in Portmarnock. And you could get Ballywinning for 15 quid at that time. So this came as a shock to the system. They all said he won't get it, but he did. Now, at the very end of that year, Michael Smurf had opened the K Club, £87. Said he's stone fucking mad, he won't get it, but he did. Now, all the clubs who didn't want visitors formed marketing committees because it was worth going for. But the grants helped a lot, and that's why they were done, to help increase the stock and make stock available for the tourism industry. And you had to agree to take visitors for 2 years. I think it was 2 years. And that suited me grand, because intended to have visitors anyway. I wasn't becoming a hideaway club. And so it was a godsend. But that was the thing about the grant. And the grant was very helpful. And everyone got the same. But it overcame the roadblock that we had this beautiful island ringed, a necklace of beautiful golf courses, but telling visitors no.
Yeah.
Hmm?
Yeah. And I guess thinking back over the years, what are the main few differences you would notice sort of modern Irish golf versus, let's say, golf in the 80s and 90s? I mean, is there any particular things that would strike you as different?
The agronomy, this presentation of the grass, huge. And everyone has a clubhouse now. When I was a kid in the province of Connacht, there were 28 golf courses, and only Galway and Sligo had a clubhouse built of stone. The others were Nissen huts, army huts and that. So the grandeur has overtaken it for the good, except that it might exclude some people on an economic basis, and people get grand and maybe close circle. But the big thing is, I told you about the fella, the volunteer cutting the greens. You had to go with your foot along, make a little railroad track. And you don't see that now. There wouldn't be many people coming to you.
No, and they'd be giving out about green speeds.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome. Fellas have, and this handicap system, holy jeez, you know, fellas with 50 handicap complaining about course design. It's quite one. As long as you wise, you don't heed them, but it's giving them amusement.
I guess it's human nature, perhaps, just because you play golf and see the game through the prism of your own game, that you don't understand and haven't maybe read around the topic. I mean, the more I read, the more I realize that I don't know. And some people that you come across, and maybe it's just their personality or the position that they find themselves in the commercial world, but they think they're infallible. They haven't read McKenzie or Colt or anybody else, and they just see that as another opinion.
Yeah, well, they're not imbued with the game, all right. And there's a lot to be figured, you know. There's, I have an essay there in Holes in My Head, and you see, it's just talking about the mathematics of the game.
Yeah.
That's it's a funny one.
It's the one about chess. The wind, is it?
Not chess. The wind is a good one. You see, the wind, the ball spends so much time in the air. People don't realize it. It's how to fly your ball through it. It's like an airplane. How do you fly your...
It's back to that judgment point that Peter Thompson so eloquently spoke about.
Yeah. Did you ever come in a light aircraft into Dublin Airport?
Unfortunately not, no.
Fuck's sake. I mean, it came down from Derry one day and it was wobbling, you know. I was so glad to get out of it. And these are American men, how they can fly these things. A ball is the same. Now, I compare golf to chess. You see, I have this picture here of a chess table, which I have down at the club. And the math, it's like the lotto, all the different combinations from a set number of digits. And it says here, the players make themselves comfortable in armchairs when going playing chess. Maybe they have a cigar and a brandy as they move into battle. It looks easy, but not so, right? After both players have made one move, they are confronted with a choice of over 400 options for their second moves. Unbelievable, because the chess fellas can go up and down. After two moves each, the players are faced with what could be described as 72,000 bunkers. Okay? And after three moves, the problems explode to 9,000 possible disasters. Now, that's on a chessboard, 64 squares, indoors, sitting down. Now, a golf course has 18 holes, all these sets of tees you can choose from, different carries to the fairway, different numbers of bunkers and positions, and you can move the chess fella around even if you have a sore shoulder, but trying to move the golf ball around, not so easy. So golf, based on a comparison to chess, is a totally impossible fucking game. It's outdoors in the elements and over a landscape. So it's a miracle people get around at all. And it's great. This is why they like it. They don't have it figured that way mathematically. But it really is a challenge. And one that fellas can't go to the Olympics anymore. They're bringing in these cycle paths now. Well, I'm not going on a cycle path with five new left hips.
Uh-huh. Hmm? Yeah.
And all the fellas heading for the nursing homes aren't going, and all the babies aren't going. Uh-huh. So you're driving along and you're looking at millions of pounds worth, billions of pounds worth of your money spread along the road for about 2% of the population.
Uh-huh.
Hmm? And a madness of man is where I'm coming at.
Yeah. The golf course at the European appears to be a family affair. Would that be fair?
Yeah, but it's my golf course in that I had this lifelong dream. But I offered, we have five children. Four of them have worked for us, one not. One left to have a family. Didn't go far, just over from the first tee.
Okay.
But no, there's a family involvement, and that's really nice in the main. They're very good. And they all observe what's going on and keep me posted. Because when you're doing course design in particular, so few people are obliging. They won't build the golf course in the next field here. You have to travel. Huh? So when I'd be gone...
How inconsiderate.
Gone to
Canada. It's a pretty good thing from a competitive perspective, though.
I went to Canada building two golf courses, so I couldn't be at home at the weekends. And they get on well with people, and that helps. It's like the hotel business. It's a people game.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't like people, there's a problem. Hmm?
Absolutely.
And you're going to meet people of all kinds. I met a fellow the other day from Baltusrol, a famous club in America. Well, a few months ago, big tall fella, and he had his wife, he's 70-ish, and two sons in their 30s or thereabouts. And they came in praising the course, but it's quite difficult. They managed to lose four buckets of range balls.
Wow.
But he very kindly was giving me back my baskets, which is nice of him. So you meet all sorts.
When I visited with you last summer, you brought me on a bit of a tour, which was very much appreciated. And you pointed out some of the changes, some of the improvements, should I say, that you've implemented. It really seems to be a mantra of continuous improvement down there for you. Would that be fair?
The game changes all the time. Oneself changes. And there's no question, it'll always be so, you know. I used to love cycling, but I prefer driving a car now. And I drove the car into bunkers on three different golf courses over the times. I drove it into the bunker at 13 one day years ago. And you don't drive a car. This is an advice. If you're driving your car around a golf course, don't go from green to tee because you won't see the bunkers. So I had three chaps from Port Marnock in the car showing them around and went down the 13th wrong way into a bunker. And lucky enough, I accelerated going in, so we nearly made the far side. And step out, and lucky enough, there were four Americans coming. I said, "Excuse me, men, would you give us a hand? Give us a hand here." So they got us out.
Okay.
And then I said, "If you don't mind, would you rake the bunker?"
I hope there wasn't too much. Well, of course, your bunkers, almost without exception then in the European, are sleeper shot.
Yes.
So that probably helped in terms of you making it across the void and getting
back
out.
Yeah, it's awesome what can happen, you know. But not many people are that good at getting their car into a bunker.
No, I can't imagine. But just apropos the sleepers in the bunkers. I mean, I know it's a traditional way of doing it. I mean, the likes of Brian Castor and Rye, amongst others, and sure...
Prestwick and so on, yeah.
Yeah. Was it homage to that? Was the rationale behind that decision?
Well, a number of things. I seldom do anything for one reason. Mm-hmm. Now, the one time I'd do a thing for one reason is I'd go like a savage for the last biscuit.
Okay. that's allowed.
No complication. Yeah, yeah. Mentioning, would you like a cup of tea?
I'm good for the moment.
Okay, good man.
But if you want a cup of tea, no, far away.
Okay. I'd be okay.
But thank you for asking.
The bunkers, as you said, they were visible in the game in south of England and up in Scotland. And I always liked the look of them. And speaking as an artist, it was another element to add to the landscape in shape and in texture and a way of showing the bunker visible to the tee. Because on links especially, if you sit the bunker up, it'll blow away most times. So how to keep the sand in a bunker and yet have a bunker and have people know where it is. And this is just a very good device. It has an artistic form, another element in the landscape. And it came to a head one day when I was out, there was some sort of a match on, and I was standing on the third tee. And this lady got into the bunker at the left of the second green. And instead of coming back out the way that was presented, she was using her wedge as a grappling iron to climb up the grass bank and breaking the bank, making a track. She got to the top. She came to my toe caps with her eyes and went back in when persuaded to do so. So I said, be damned, that's bad. And then every 4 or 5 years, a bunker would blow out of shape if it was built of sod. And then the reveted sod revet does fade very often, especially if it's facing the prevailing wind. So I just thought of Scotland. I said, no, the sleepers would give me the visibility, the durability, and it'll all work, you see.
Those old dead guys knew what they were doing.
Yeah, oh yeah. And angle them broadly at 40 degrees away from the shot. The fella's using a wedge, so he's not coming up straight around the ground. He's coming up, and the club is throwing the ball up, and the angle of reflection and refraction, she bounces out over his head or sideways. And so it's quite safe. And there was one moment of trouble when some geniuses, people who make the rules of golf and all that, and manufacturers are a mess, they brought in the soft spikes.
Yeah.
Because I had sleeper steps into the bunkers, and they were very safe when the fellas got in with the metal spikes. You see, he could hold them on the thing. Now, these slippy things, I had to take out big sections of the bunkers and put in grassy slopes in instead, and just a few steps carpeted for safety. So that was the only challenge to it. But I like them very much. A lot of people like them. Some don't. So what? Hmm?
And you seem to have a great greenkeeping team down there as well. They were
awesome. Awesome.
They're a key component part of the presentation of the links.
In every golf course in the country, I have some great friends in the sheds. But my own fellas...
The great unsung heroes, in fact.
I sing them myself. The oldest serving one is there since the start. We never fired anyone, never made anyone redundant. And one or two died and one or two got old. But I have fellas there now, we're 35 years open, and years before that getting ready. And they're there side by side with me all the time. And really, really remarkable men. They're out in all conditions, cutting grass and I'd say to them now and again, cheer them up. I'd say, you know, bad day and you're doing this. I'd say, now the first son of a bitch come in here complaining about the golf course, we'll kill him.
pack the orange and the sock.
Okay, just kill the bastard. Because it is awesome. You know, a fella with not even a flower pot at home thinks he can criticize things. And it's truly an amazing thing in people that they don't think. They don't think.
Well, you know, the great Brad Klein said to me in episode 3, I think, he goes, 90% of a golf course is under the ground.
Oh, yeah.
If you can't see it, how the hell do you know it's there?
That's right. No, it's awesome. But I know people, there are people, so you have to love them, you see.
Yeah.
And I say to them, gentlemen, now remember that it's best played on short grass.
Yeah. True.
Put on the short grass and keep it there.
Yeah.
Pretend you're walking your doggy, you know. And I say, piddle, piddle up the middle. And
I knew you were going to reference that.
Do you have a doggy at home?
Uh-huh.
I say, yes. I say, you know, they're great piddlers. So bring them for a walk, but don't let them to the trees for a pee or you're dead.
Yeah.
And I went over to a fellow the other day in the rough at the first, and he was cursing me for being a dumb fucking dumbass designer. And I said, well, tell me this. Where are you aiming at? He said, I was aiming at the fairway. When I said, I have a tip for you, aim at the rough. See? And he took it, okay. Another fella, this is a very serious penalty for me. After the war, golf balls were scarce. And there was a fella at Rosset Point, an old man, Gillen. He used to go around wearing 3 overcoats because he had pockets in each. And he was like McBurney's. Remember McBurney's store, department store? Each pocket was a department, different grade of golf ball. Penny, twopence, threepence. If you wanted a sixpenny ball, he'd vanish over the hill for half an hour and come back with 3 or 4 he had hidden down a rabbit hole. So you got your golf balls and you minded them. And I used to hang them up off the rafters on thread and paint them, just a pin in them. So you would paint everything except the pinhole. And you keep your balls going out and out. Modern man just goes, whew, whew. Mm. I had one fella playing the championship there a few years ago, +6 handicap, which is an amazing handicap, +6. And he took 5 to hit the golf course at hole 7.
He gets the balls for free, though.
He puts 5 out, 4 out of bounds. And then he came looking for me to complain about the unfair golf course. And I said, now, son, you remind me of a jackass entered for Cheltenham. Trot on home, which he did. He came back the next day, fair juice, money, young fella, and he apologized and gave me a Rolo or something, and we're the best of friends, and he has steadied down. He's a good golfer. But people don't think it out fully, and they get excited. The latest episode I had, I'm going to bore the ass off, you know, get you in the right.
No, go on.
I do observe, you see, how things are going. So 4 or 5 Sundays in a row, I went out for a spin around, see how the members are getting on. I came on this member 4 Sundays in a row in the rough at hole 9 on the right, which is a tough place, all right, up to his knees in grass. So during the week, I said, okay, I'd cut some grass there for him. And we'd spent 2 days cutting and hauling, and I found a good few balls, some of his which he didn't get back. And then we went out the following Sunday, and here he was, up to his arse in the rough on the left, and me after cutting the rough on the right.
He's an equal opportunities employer.
So I said, well, damn him. So I said I'd cut more rough, and which we've done a lot of rough in the last few years, and it's much more manageable golf course to keep your ball alive on now. But I went to 11, and up this hill, the sand hill, and I was picking the bits of grass we'd cut, because you don't want to go up and cut all the seaside grass out. I was identifying the rough grasses for the lads. And I looked down, and there just below me, 2 lovely golf balls side by side as if they were in a nest. So I leaned forward on the stick, as I'm very partial to golf balls. Tom Craddock and I would kill each other for a ball when we were out surveying land.
Oh, yeah?
And leaned over, and I said, I go get ye in a wild babies. Next thing, I was going head first down past them.
Oh, Jamie.
At speed. and I was knocked out, and I was down below, I don't know how long, and then I couldn't get up, so I phoned for the greenkeepers, and they came with a gaiter, and they were lifting me into it, and I said, hold on, lads, just stand me up.
There's two balls to get up here.
One of you get up there and get those two balls, right? Now, I came home and I was dizzy for a few weeks, so I said, I better go and see if there's anything wrong. And went for a CAT scan, and there's blood on the brain.
Jamie.
And that gave me a great thrill, because now I had scientific proof that Ruddy has a brain. What do you think?
Very good pass.
But when
very
I was finished good. With the CAT scans,
yeah.
I hope I'm okay. Finished with the CAT scans, it had cost me just on 2,000 quid for, so nearly 1,000 quid per fucking ball.
Yeah.
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 That's good. Some outline.
Yeah.
No doubt you have plans afoot for further improvements down in Britis. Would that be fair?
Always, and it's coming like holes in my head at night time. You're thinking of things. But the big question, of course, is how long is the string of life? You know, that's. But subject to that, yes, what else would you be at? Yeah, you know, and to have unhampered. People are kind enough to say, nice. And it's great to give people something new to look at. And that's better. It was Johnny Miller came. Everyone was saying he should cut grass. Johnny Miller came. He spent a long time with us there years ago. Okay. He's one of the great players. And the people were saying, oh, it's rough. And he said, this would be a great course for the Open Championship if you grew more rough.
Yeah.
So there's so many different views upon.
Well, exactly. But ultimately it's...
But yes, you're always thinking. Well, you would yourself be thinking.
Yeah. What would the question is, what I'd be thinking wouldn't be the same as what you'd be thinking.
Yeah, well, it's a foot of torches. It's like the fella who had the lawn at home. It was full of crap, you get it right. And he's walking to work each day past the palace. He's looking in the railings at this lovely striped lawn going up the hill to the palace. And one day the gardener was just inside the railings as he came by. I said, excuse me, how do you get a lawn like that? Your man said, well, you dig it up. You take all the big stones and weeds out of it. You rake it around. You might add in some things to it. And then you get it the shape you want. Then you seed it and you feed it and you water it and you mow it. And you keep doing that for 400 years. That's golf course. Never done. If you want it, the day you stop, you ever see, I was doing a nearly done house plants.
Okay. You're doing a book on houseplants?
Yeah.
Okay.
The sort of houseplants that you see in Donegal or up in Meath, where an old cottage has fallen down and all the plants grown up out of it. I look, you go along most roads, you see the plants grown out of the chimney pots. Houseplants. And I find it an amusing thought, the amount of plants grown in houses. And very sad in the old house that it falls down and grows. But the point I make is, a golf course, if you leave it alone for more than 2 weeks, you're heading the wrong way.
Yeah, it's a living, breathing organism. And I remember seeing, where was it? I remember seeing Ratsala about 12 months after it was shuttered, before it opened back up. And quite remarkable how quickly it degrades.
Yeah. See, I did work in a lot of clubs, small jobs, Delgany and Greystones and that. And you go in and you'd say, we twitch this hole to go right. And you go in, you'd find a green under a big forest of gorse. And it was only left a year. And the new members in, new committee and that, never saw that green. And there it was still all the time, but just overtaken by the growth.
Yeah. Well, I remember, and this place should remain nameless, but I went on a walking tour of a course in England last summer. And for various reasons, nine holes was essentially abandoned. But amazingly, the consultants that are involved in putting a master plan together have actually found some greens in the middle of a forest. And actually, there was a reservoir put in, and miraculously, that didn't touch any of the greens. So they're looking at reinstating, at some point in the future, reinstating that particular mine, which is lost completely to trees and detritus as we speak.
Rosses. I took the course of charting the greens.
Surveyed it, right? I saw
Did
that.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. We'll get on to Rosses in a sec.
Yeah, but
I want to do Donegal, first of all.
Donegal. Yeah, there I was in a good follow through as a kid. Good follow through.
Oh, very good. Classical.
Yeah, me with Christie and the sub at Ross's Point in 1960, £2.12.
Wow.
Wow.
I remember a father of a pal of mine took out life membership of Ballybunion, maybe the end of the 70s or early 80s.
£200.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't take one myself because I had honorary membership.
There you go.
That was a lot of money then.
It was.
That was a lot of money. It's totally forgotten. You see, my dad got married in 1939. Uh-huh. Not much changed from that up to the 60s. And his father-in-law-to-be was a builder. He offered to build him a 5-bedroom house on a little hill opposite the cathedral, looking down on the Moy, not far from where Joe Biden
people are from, yeah.
And dad didn't take it, thought he was a crook. He wanted £239 for it.
Okay.
You see, and it
simpler,
didn't change.
Simpler times.
Yeah, people didn't have the benefit of the price has been stuck for a long time. So £100 was an unthinkable amount of money. The ambition in our house was I was the rebel. I went on to be a journalist and a business person. But they wanted us to go to school, get a good education, get a job in the bank or the civil service, serve your time quietly for 30 years, and you get a pension at the end of it. You get £1,000 a year and a pension at the end of it. And you're safe. And not a bad formula, but the figures have changed.
Many thanks for tuning in. As usual, you can find us online at firmandfast.gov. Or on Twitter at firmandfastgolf. Please continue to like, subscribe, and comment. It really is appreciated. Until the next time, happy golfing.